dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning dream packs. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. To CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RAMs, SIPs, SIPs. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hey everybody, this is Stank Dog, and you are listening to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 100 and motherfucking 2. What do you think about that? Starting off the show with an MF bomb. I think there's going to be quite a few more of those coming up later on in the show based on the topic that we are going to be discussing today. Today, of course, being Tuesday, June 28th, 2005. And when I say we, I'm referring to my new first-time co-host this week, who... this is actually kind of a funny story. This, even though this is a first-time co-host, he's actually been on the show more than I have. It's actually a very strange situation that I have to admit is kind of a weird feeling. So I'll let you guys think about that for a second while I go on to a little bit more housekeeping. I have to apologize, kind of apology and thank you at the same time to Austin. Austin, if you're listening, Austin had sent me a package like a couple months ago. And I had set it down in my office and totally forgot about it. Just misplaced it. I threw it on a desk and just never looked at it again, never caught my eye. Just completely slipped my mind. I've just been so overwhelmed, and I just stumbled across it again this week. And I wanted to thank you, Austin, and apologize that it took me so long to thank you and get back to you. But Austin has sent me some issues, some back issues of Blacklisted Magazine. And I have some of them, and I would like to have a complete set. I have not gotten time to, unfortunately, see if there are any of the ones I'm missing and put them together yet. But I definitely wanted to thank you for sending them, and I did get them and wanted to confirm that again and thank you on the air. I feel so bad that it took me this long to get back to you. I should have at least emailed you or something. And in case you're wondering or think I snubbed you, I totally apologize. I'm not that big of a dick. I'm kind of a dick, but not that big of a dick. So I wanted to thank you about that. But, yeah, I'm trying to put together a collection. You know, I've got all the old 2600s, of course, and several blacklisted 411s. I'd like to put together a whole collection of not only those, but Thud magazines, which was the Hackers Underground Digest, which is also put out by the same people that did Blacklisted 411. So if anybody's got duplicates or anything they want to send me, I would love to have them. But, yeah, specifically, again, to Austin. Thank you so much for that, sending those to me. And the information in my Who is real information. That's real address, name, and everything. So thank you for sending those again, Austin. I apologize it took me so long to get back to you. Now, my co-host this week, if you haven't figured it out, I'm thinking the people in IRC probably caught on to this pretty quickly, because if you think logically, who in the world could possibly have been on the show more than me? I took a couple shows off. I had some personal business to take care of, some family emergency, family situation to take care of, and Doug and Lucky 225 took over the show for a couple weeks. But they, even them, with those two extra shows over me, that's not who I'm talking about. There's one person who you've heard from episode 0 right up until episode 102 today. And that person is my co-host, and I'm just tickled pink to have on the show. That's kind of gay sounding, isn't it? Tickled pink. I am excited to have on the show with us this week the one and only Zerl to co-host the show with me. Zerl, welcome to the show.
Ah, greetings and salutations, my digital dogs, computer comrades, and hacker and cracker brethren.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? We have been trying to do this for a while. You and I both are very, very busy people, and I think we'll kind of talk about that a little bit later on in the show, but I'm glad we did finally work out some timing to make this happen.
Yes, within a decade, we pulled it off before the 10-year mark, which was good, Stink.
Mm. Man, you're committing me to 8 more years? Good grief. Gosh, I don't even know if I'm going to be so old by then. I don't even think anybody's going to be interested in what I have to say. I'm not even going to be in computers 10 years from now, the way things are going.
Your words are true. We've known each other for quite some time, and you've been a big supporter of me, and we've been definitely trying to do this show, I guess, since its inception.
For a long time, really.
For a long time.
This is kind of weird. We don't usually do this, but it's a little tangent. I don't know if I've ever told you this, or if I did, I don't know if you remember this story. You tell me. You know how I first found out about your music and how I first got in touch with you? Do you know where?
No.
I went out on, what was it at the time? It might have actually been back in the days of Napster, believe it or not.
The N-word? You're going to say Napster?
If it wasn't Napster, it was one of the earliest peer-to-peer things, and I just did a search for Hacker. And I came across this song called HackerCracker.mp3. And I downloaded it to see what the hell it was, and from that moment on, I said, I've got to find this dude. And I out searching, I went out digging, and made contact with you. This was back in, like, Red Dagger.
Yes, it was.
Right?
Yeah.
See? I know what I'm talking about. So it's been, gosh, it's been a long time, hasn't it? It really has.
It has been a long time, my friend.
Wow, that just sunk in. I didn't realize it's been that long. We've been doing this show for 2 years, and you've been opening this show for us for 2 years.
It wasn't until you used the software I realized how long we were talking.
Yeah, well, gosh, you're right. That is, wow, man, I want to stop the show now and have some nostalgia talk.
We've seen a lot of P2P networks rise and fall since those times.
Yeah,
you know, if we're going to measure time in software, is that going to be something in the future where...
Yeah, we'll all be cyborgs and just download straight to our cerebral cortex or something, hard drive in our brain. I won't even get into the Gestapo tactics of how all these peer-to-peer get shut down and restarted and et cetera. But,
you had to mention it, and that's why we love you, Stank.
Yeah, I know. I'm not one to bite my tongue, and I think everybody knows that. Let's get to our housekeeping, though. There's really only one thing, and this kind of affects both of us, and that is just to let everybody know that Zurl.com is now moved over and hosted by BenRev, which we are so glad to do for you, for all the stuff you've done and given us permission and all the support you've given us over the years. Absolutely glad to have you over there. And
it's a meeting of old souls, and I hope it's going to be a relationship that really is a long-term one, that we can both really excel and educate each other. I'm really excited about it. It's a wonderful integration, and the people applaud.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you keep sending me that $50 a month, we're good.
Right, okay. Oh, so such money, right?
Exactly. No. We'll be glad to do it as long as we can, and I don't see any problems with that.
In true Hacker and Cracker fashion, I must say, my friend.
Well, and honestly, it really is. And we're going to find out later on in the show that there is a surprising amount of camaraderie, you know, between the way you and I think about things is really, really right on. Whether it's music, hacking, politics, a lot of different things. We're more alike than we are different, that's for sure.
Yes.
But before we get into that, let's jump into the mailbag for a few minutes.
Mail@benred.com.
You're going to love this first email this week. This is great. I've told you this in the past as a joke that we get these emails very frequently on the show. So this is great timing. I couldn't make this up if I wanted to. Our first email this week comes from Leet for Life. And Leet for Life says, "Dear Stank Dog, I love the show and especially love the theme song. Who does the theme song, and can you send me a copy?"
Well, Stank, I guess I can handle this one today, right?
Well, yeah, actually, go ahead. Well, I'll tell you what. I wrote the song, and if you send me $5, I'll send you a copy on CD. It was no, of course I'm kidding. Go ahead, and this is a momentous occasion in history that you get to answer this question.
Well, I guess Zerl did the song, and Stank Dog has on his forums had an entire message dedicated to answering this, and I really appreciate that. I've got a lot of traffic over the years, and you can find the song at Zerl.com, Z-E-A-R-L-E. And that's about the extent of it. And send Stank $5.
Yeah, exactly right. No, of course don't send us $5. Actually, we've got another idea we're going to pop on later on in the show, speaking of $5. But, again, we'll wait on that as well. But, actually, since we're kind of on this topic, is Hackers and Crackers, is that like your most successful track? Is that the one that's more widespread than, I mean, what's the biggest track? Is that it?
Interesting you asked. I did a track called Destiny's Child, and I guess everyone thought it was the real Destiny's Child. And I used to get like thousands of downloads, and I guess people were really disappointed to find me preaching, you know, my typical collective politics instead of these three women crooning. So, since the facade of the Destiny's Child song, I mean, Hackers and Crackers has indeed been my new hit and definitely most popular. And really given me the inspiration to continue working and doing more stuff, you know.
I would love to see, maybe one day we'll sit down and talk stats of the site, too, because, you know, my other favorite song is Watch Me. I think Watch Me is I think that's just a great, not only, you know, see, the thing about, we were talking about the Hackers and Crackers, but, and how that's such a great beat that you can just listen to over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But with Watch Me, I think it's the lyrical, I mean, the hook and the style of that is just, I might almost say that's a better song than Hackers and Crackers.
I appreciate it, man.
You know,
I
think they're both really good. Really good stuff. Okay. Anyway, enough blowing smoke up your ass. Let's move on with the show here. Next email this week comes from Jalada. Jalada says, "Hey, Stank Dog and Zerl. There is an article suggesting that Google approached..." I kind of edited this up. It was kind of a long letter, so I cut this down a little bit. "There's an article suggesting that Google approached an online retailer asking if they would like to be part of their new system. This new system is going to rival PayPal, apparently. Do I sense your Google ranting beginning even as you read this? I can see where you might come from. It could tie in with Frugal, Gmail, no longer free, now pay through GPay system, classified ads, and so on. And now they're going to have your credit card details and shopping habits. They might even add those to the targeted adverts on Gmail." Yeah, so, actually, I know you've got, let me say it real quickly, because mine's not, I'm not going to rant on this. I mean, I know some people seem to think that I'm anti-Google, and I'm not. I just have reservations about Google's direction, and I hope they go the right direction. I'm not saying they're gone evil, but I'm saying they could, because money talks, stockholders run and make decisions. I'm worried. That's all I've ever really said. So, no, I'm not going to rant about this. Quite honestly, if it's good, I would use it, because PayPal gets on my left nut. I'm so sick.
I hate them.
PayPal takes too much of the cut, but you know what? They have no competition. So if Google starts something to compete with them, I think that's great. You know, more competition is better for us, the consumer. So I think that's perfectly good. Now, you know, he has a theory about Gmail. Maybe they charge for that. I think they've always said that that would be free. And if they went back on that, that would make them into just out-and-out liars. So, yeah, that would piss me off. That would not be cool.
That would piss me off, too. I agree with you.
But I honestly don't use Gmail so much. I use it a little bit, but no, I still have, you know, and you do too now. You have at Zerl.com. You have all the space.
Yeah, I went Gmail. I hate Hotmail. They burned me. The 2 meg thing, I had to throw away all my emails for 10 years. Screw them. I'll never use them again. They sucked my last nut. You know, I went to Gmail only because of the ultimate betrayal by Hotmail. And then they're going to throw their little, megabyte increases at the end. I wasn't impressed, you know.
Yeah, that's reactive instead of being proactive. They're reactive.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. As far as Google Stink, I agree with you. Yahoo was, of course, the giant before Google, and I was really happy with Google in the beginning, and I liked a lot of the things they did, and I was optimistic, and Google Maps and some of the things they have going on in Google Labs. But I read on Slashdot that they've been emailing people that have been using Google Maps and saying that they're not using for the right purposes. You know, some of the things that Google Maps is being used for are to map where pedophiles are in cities in Florida or Chicago. I can't really remember the city. And so I thought that was, what you're saying is the appearance of Google not making the right decisions. This is a precarious position when you have a company get this powerful and really right. have a lot of the people's backing. And so I'm interested in what happens with Google in the future, and I think you present an interesting point, Matt.
I think the next year is going to be very interesting to watch Google and how they respond. Actually, I didn't know about them sending out letters about using the maps. I mean, I thought that was another one of Google's overall policies was
they said,
we're just going to provide the information, provide access to the information. We just put out a good engine and let the people use it and deal with it. And now they're going to start sending letters telling us how we can and cannot use it? No.
And Slashdot was specific to say that these letters were very nicely worded, which is, I guess, the saving grace of Google. You know, like, if they're going to shit on you, at least they do it in a nice way. You know, they're not being total pricks. They're being nice. You know, hey, you know, please don't overuse our services, you know, or ask us for permission before you do it, even though we've told you can do whatever you want with it. And it's still in its lab. It's still a beta form. It's not even fully put out, I think, right?
Yeah, and you know what? That's a good point. Maybe because it's in beta, I think they do have kind of disclaimers on their lab stuff that says they reserve the right to modify it or change its use. So maybe that's the disclaimer they're hiding under or something.
My brother sent me a picture, just briefly, of Fallujah with Google Maps. And so I guess they're expanding, and I wasn't quite, I didn't know this, but he sent me a picture of Buckingham Palace in Fallujah. I'd only explored the United States, so I guess I hadn't really got into the international maps yet.
Yeah, I have not either. That's a good point. I didn't even think about it. I do know, I don't remember if I shared this on the air before or not, but I went to look at Disney World up in Orlando, Florida, north of me. And when you try to zoom into Disney World, it says, sorry, information not available. They don't let you see Disney World from overhead view. They block it. How messed up is that? I'm telling you, when the mouse...
You can't know what goes on. I mean, Disney's the big brother, so they can't have a big brother on top of them, I guess. You know?
When the mouse talks, people listen. Telling you.
Exactly.
There are actually some sites out there. I do not know the URLs offhand, but there's at least two or three sites out there that are like, they call them like virtual tourists or something, where they basically go out and find a bunch of landmarks. You can go to the site, and it has them broken down by category, like famous buildings, big cities, amusement parks, great lakes and stuff. And what it is basically the Google map of these items. So if you wanted to go see, for example, I don't know, the Sphinx or the pyramids, they would have that already saved, and you could go to the site and basically do like a virtual tour or something using the satellite view. So that's kind of neat. Yeah, so you can go and see a bunch of these different... because there's some really cool architecture out there. There's some cool, like, I don't know that I'll ever go see the pyramids in my lifetime. I don't know. I just made that up. I don't know if they're actually on there. But, you know, stuff like that, I don't know that I'm ever going to make it to see the Grand Canyon or hopefully I'll make it to that. If it's in the United States, hopefully I'll make it to it eventually. But, you know, it's kind
of... I think I ran across a blog link of Google Maps being used in the same way, Google Map Vacation or something, where they had done just what you're suggesting. Grand Canyon, they had basically scouted out certain, landmarks across the United States. Devil's Tower, interesting stuff that you could look at with Google, you know.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. And, you know, is Google going to start saying that they can't do that now or something, or... I don't know.
Well, more power of the Internet. I love it. You know, Keyhole, all of this software has been really amazing to me. I went and visited my childhood home in Florida. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting, you know.
Yeah, we've had a saying that I think on the very first episode of the show I said this, and this is, people tease me about some of my countrified sayings. You know, I grew up in the country and have some, a little bit of country sayings, redneck sayings, whatever. And I think on the very first episode of the show, I made this comment. And here, 2 years later, it still holds completely true about anything on the Internet. Once it's released on the Internet, that's it. And the way I said it was, and this is an old country saying, you can't put the shit back in the horse.
No, you can't.
Once
absolutely
it's out,
not.
It's out. So Google putting this information out there, and there's a lot of hackers right now, even in our forums. Gosh, I wish I could give credit to the person's name offhand. Was posting out there that he's trying to find a way to pull that information off of Google, right, like an interface, an API for it or something, where he can pull that mapping information off, because Google limits what you can and can't do with it. So like latitude, longitude, for example, things like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's out there now, and it's only a matter of time. People are going to start hacking it. That's what we do, you know?
Yes, it is, and we're looking forward to this new generation, man.
Yeah, we don't accept limitations. That's a general thing about the hacker community. We're going to push it to the extreme. We're going to use it however we think is best to use it and get the best use out of something. Don't tell me what I can and can't do with it. If you're going to put it out there and get the fuck out of the way, you know?
I agree, man. I agree.
Yeah. But one other thing he mentions in his email was about the credit card info. I mean, if my credit card infos are out there tied into something else, that is a point of concern. I mean, Google, one of my reasons that I do worry about Google is the way that they have implemented all of the accounts. Like, for example, it used to be Gmail was a separate thing. And Zerl, I don't even know if you've noticed this. I want you to watch this if you haven't already. But when you go to Gmail and you sign on, when you were done and then you went to Google.com, it was a separate thing.
Yeah.
You know, you had a Gmail account and that was it. Now,
right.
go to Gmail, check it, log in, check your email and everything, and then just go to Google. And you'll notice in the upper right-hand corner, it says sign out. Because it has you logged into Google. It also the same account that you use to access any Google groups. So all of this stuff is shared. They know what groups you're going to. They know what email you're getting with by doing the targeted advertising. That's what worries me. And if they actually do tie this on to the GPay or whatever they end up calling it, whatever this payment thing is, and they track what I buy, how much I spend, and start targeting advertising to me like that, that does get... Yeah, I can't fault them because it hasn't happened yet. But yeah, it's a concern. If they go that direction, that could be a bad thing. That could be scary.
Yeah, you don't want them to go Borg on you, man. I dig that.
You dig that.
Yeah, I dig that.
To a certain extent, it makes it nice and convenient. You know, there's nothing wrong with a single sign-on.
Well, this was all the accusations against Microsoft, where they were going Borg on us, you know. They were integrating too much. They were becoming too powerful. They had too much access to information.
Yep.
Too much access to consumer, servitude. You know, the fact that they were, embedding their software into it. We had no other choice. So it's interesting that, you know, I like that you're bringing this up about Google. I mean, what's happening is you get to be this giant. You have to start making decisions, you know, whether you're good or evil. And most of the time we know how this falls, because money talks and bullshit walks.
Right. And I hope, and I think you feel the same way, I hope that Google doesn't go down that same route.
Yeah.
You know, Google so far has been, for the most part, pretty good. So hopefully this is all worries of things that will never come to be, but, you know, just... Watch your ass, that's all. Just be careful.
That was a good email. Yeah, that was a good email question.
Yeah, Gelada's... And actually, we've got... I think we have another email from Gelada coming up, too. But
cool.
First, email from Graham. Graham says, "Hi, you stank. I've been listening for about 3 weeks now. Got as far back as episode 75 so far. And must say that on the whole, I love what I'm hearing. I'm from the UK. That's awesome. We have a lot of overseas listeners, which is fantastic. So another foreigner listener to add to your list. On a different
Love
note,
it.
Yeah. On a different note, just a small pet peeve of mine. This is actually Google related too. This is a good transition. Usenet and Google Groups, or Deja News as it used to be called, aren't the same thing at all. Google Groups is nothing more than a not very good interface and archive of Usenet. Usenet itself was around a long time before Google and will hopefully be around for a long time to come. Also, Yahoo Groups and Google Groups are, again, very different concepts. Yahoo Groups used to be e-groups, for anyone who remembers back that far, and is basically a close approximation to a single news group, but with a whole lot of other stuff bolted onto it. And, yeah, this is he's referring back to last week's show, where I did talk about how Google bought up Deja News database and is trying to kind of incorporate these things together, and I compared it to Yahoo Groups, because Yahoo Groups also offers mailing lists and databases and uploads and things like that. So, yeah, Yahoo Groups is definitely more feature-filled compared to Google Groups. The comparison, okay, back to his email, he says, a comparison can be made between a Yahoo group and a news group, but there is a large gap between the two. Yahoo Groups is, as I said, much more fully featured than Usenet, but it also ties you down to using their interface to access it. Right. Finally, I personally almost always use the Google search engine for any searches that I do. This isn't because I think it's better or anything like that, but simply because I use Opera as my web browser, and that comes with a Google search bar next to the address bar. Makes searches so much quicker just to type it in there than to have to go to the search engine homepage. It is customizable as to what search engine it uses, but I've never bothered to change the defaults, as I've always been more than happy with it. So, yeah, he said quite a bit more than that, but I cut it down to that part. First of all, welcome to the show. I hope you do stick around. You know, we get a lot of new listeners, and they start listening to the shows backwards in time, which is awesome. People are still downloading episode one, episode zero, so that's really cool. Yeah, like I said, I cut some of this email out, but the Google stuff is good. Also, if you really want to listen to he sent me a lot of information about Google AdWords. And I'm actually going to be presenting on Hacking Google AdWords at DEF CON next month. So I already covered a lot of what he said in this email and a lot of this presentation, some of the presentation, back in episode 86 of the show. So what are we, 102? So a couple months back, 3 months back. And that's pretty much an overview of how AdWords work. So, yeah, I already had that on the show before. Now, on to Google Groups itself. Yeah, they're completely different from Usenet, but as he mentioned right here in his email himself, they bought the Usenet archive from Deja News, and that was the big Usenet archive, which I don't know who, but Deja News even bought it from someone else. I think some other company or some other university or something had made the thing in the first place, and they got bought out and traded around, et cetera, the highest bidder type deal. But Google then went on to try to make Google Groups to somewhat compete with Yahoo Groups, because Yahoo Groups is a cool service. It really is. But Google tried to make Google Groups, and the problem is that, it's not a problem exactly, but what they tried to do is merge Google Groups with Usenet. So they've always had Usenet browsable through Google interface, you know, and you could browse Usenet. But then when they implemented Google Groups, basically they're trying to blur the lines between what is Usenet and what is a Google group. Like if you go to, alt.hackers, that's a Usenet group, and you browse it through the Google interface. But if I go out there and make Stank Dog Hackers, it's going to look exactly the same as the Usenet. So you're using the same interface, and it blurs the line. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just the design that they went with. So, yeah, they're absolutely two different things, but they use the same interface to work together, and it kind of makes this bastardized groups program that confuses people of what's really Usenet and what's not. And if people forget how to use the real, I guess for lack of a better word anyway, the real Usenet, direct access to NNTP and Usenet servers, then it could be, I don't know, it's just kind of a mess. I'm not sure that I think it's the most healthy thing. If they get people posting to Usenet through Google Groups, and being that their Google is huge as they are, and so many people using them, and so few people knowing how Usenet really works. And we did an episode of the show, all the main topic was Usenet, and how it works, and what the protocol and all that kind of stuff was about. If people forget how that was all set up and how that works directly, and start thinking that Google is the only way or the fastest way to it, it's going to get to the point where Usenet might die, because why do you need Usenet when Google Groups is pretty much the same thing the way that they've got it set up? And I'm talking about to your average everyday user. To people like us, of course, yes, a lot of us know the difference. But if people start thinking it's a Google thing, they're only going to access it through Google, and that's dangerous to Usenet in the long run.
I dig that.
All right. Now, as far as Google, using Google to search because it's built in there, yeah, that's fine. I mean, I use it for the majority of my searches. I try to balance stuff, but I still use Google for 50% or more of my searches. You know, I use Yahoo search for probably 30%. I mix stuff around. There's one called a9.com which is the one that's owned by Amazon. That's kind of an interesting one. I like the, I just find the technologies of each one of them interesting and the way they do things. So I play with all of them. So there's nothing wrong with using Google, especially through your toolbar if it's built in and convenient for you. That's fine. Just realize that if you go searching for, alien hentai porn tentacle rape whatever, that the potential exists that Google's got that log. That's all.
I know you got to be concerned about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I also fall into the lazy category. I use Firefox, and there's the Google search bar works really good for me. But I, you know, in doing Scholastic searches, I've actually really realized the limitations of Google, and I agree with you that you should use other search engines,
At work, I almost exclusively use Google because I'm always doing work searches.
Right.
I'm doing code searches. I'm doing research or whatever. I almost exclusively use Google. There's nothing wrong with it. But when I come home and I want to look up source code for something or a program I want to download or an application or something along those lines, then I try to mix it up, vary it up, use proxy servers, things like that, just in case.
Well, I hope people aren't just going to one doctor either, Stank Dog.
You know what? That's a great, that is a great comparison. That really is a good, that's a good parallel.
But, I mean, you're not going to let just one guy and his crazy opinion work on you. He's Stank, the kidneys, they need to come out, you know. The kidneys need to go. The other doctor says, no, we'll just give you some pills, you'll be fine. Well, I think you really made a mistake.
Yeah.
So definitely, you know, we should be, recognizing that this information is valuable to us, and if we want the right information, then we should get differing opinions. Cross-referencing is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, that is a great thing. Get a second opinion on your search results. That's what we're preaching here. Get a second opinion for your searches. There's nothing wrong with that. All right. Let's see. Another email from Gelada who says, a while ago, actually episode 78, you mentioned VoIP plus Zoris equals Elite. And Zoris, of course, is the PDA, handheld PDA, and voice over IP combined. And he's referring to, I think it was iCringely, I want to say, column, a PBS thing about he had interviewed and was talking about this gentleman. I believe it was in Canada. It's been a while. It's episode 78. That was quite a while ago. But basically, it was really cool because this guy with his PDA, inside of his house would be a VoIP phone, which is what we're talking on right now, of course, the VoIP phone that I do the show on. But then when he walked outside of the house, the same device was outside of the VoIP signal, the wireless signal, and latched onto the cell phone network and became a cell phone. Same device. No matter where you went, it would use whatever was available, so you're constantly wired in, constantly doing the best, most efficient, cheapest thing. Like if you're in the house, it'll use your VoIP and not use your minutes and charge you, etc. And just what a great idea that was. And I made a big deal about that because that's such an awesome. And this guy was doing a lot of other cool stuff as well. So, and I'm positive, episode 78, if you look in the show notes, I'm positive there's a link there. If anybody did not hear that episode, wants to go read the article, check it out. Episode 78 show notes definitely has the link to it.
Dope technology, man.
Yeah, so let's see. Where did I leave off? Okay, I just found out that BT are doing the same thing. BT, of course, is British Telecom. It's called BT Fusion, and more information can be attained at www.btfusion.bt.com. Thought you might like to know, since you and a lot of the DDP are VoIP and Asterisk fans. Well, yeah, everybody listening right now to the show, go to that website, www.btfusion.bt.com. They are offering this as a service from British Telecom. Do you think there's any...
I checked it out, man. It's raw.
Is there any chance in hell that Bell South is going to offer this? Hell no!
No!
This is ridiculous. I get so frustrated at stories like this because this is fucking elite. This is so cool that they would offer this at any price, let alone at hopefully a competitive. I didn't see a price on there. But why are we here in the United States behind everybody else in the world? We can't even master cell phone technology here. Phone calls drop offline all the time. You lose connection, interference. Phones just suddenly, spontaneously shut off. We have fucking cell phones that explode in little kids' pockets and burn their faces and stuff, you know? This is ridiculous. This is the United States of America. And we are falling behind the rest of the fucking world in technology. And that's just... It's frustrating.
It happened for a long time, too.
As an American, it's frustrating. Where's mine, damn it?
You know, I got a rant about this, too. I've been calling my mother for like 10 years and paying the most ridiculous prices for international calls, whether it was a phone card or however I was doing it. I mean, you know, they told me I get 120 minutes, I got 60 minutes. Skype blew my mind.
Yes.
I'm blown away by Skype, and I feel like a fool for all these years. And I just, you know, I'm telling everybody, this technology is mind-blowing. I'm talking to my mother for free every night. We talked for so long where it's like blank space now. It's just been a change in my life, and I'm just, this technology needs to be shared by all, and this is a big, big issue. And the United States, you know, trying to maintain their, you know, empire is steady pushing away all the things that it would need to continue its dominance. And I think this is one of the reasons we're going to see big-time changes in the United States they're headed in the future.
But we have to fight so hard for it. I mean, what you're talking about, VoIP technology is oncoming. It is hitting hard right now. And instead of our government embracing it and supporting it and taking the side of consumers, saying, you now have an option, you know, we're letting you do this and we're voice over IP is taking off and now the phone companies are going to compete. They're not. They're fighting it.
Right.
Because they're paid by these big phone companies. They're getting money shoved in their pockets by these big phone companies to keep them in business, these giant legalized monopolies that they are.
Right.
Meanwhile, they're trying to regulate. VoIP right now is great because I don't have to pay a fucking franchise fee, a 911 fee, a 911 fee for security, a connection fee, a whatever other bullshit yank my dick fee they want to put on there. I can use VoIP technology and skip all this shit. But the government wants to start adding it on to VoIP and stick their nose in. Get the fuck out of technology already.
I agree, man.
Yeah,
a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about.
Yeah, we're probably getting borderline into politics now, so we should probably pull back a little bit. But yes, it just is so damn frustrating. This country, the United States of America, instead of, you know, this is supposed to be of the people, for the people, by the people. And it's not. It's of the corporations, by the corporations, for the corporations. And that's the biggest problem with the United States right now. And I'm not going to go into a political thing, but that is the God's honest truth. Instead of looking out for my best interest as a consumer and giving me options and the best technologies and making my life better as a citizen of this country, which is what we're supposed to be focusing on and founding on, instead, they're looking out for big businesses and having their own pockets padded. So
I
I'm going to pull
that
back. Yeah.
Man. I think that was a good way to move on. I think that really summed up exactly what we were both implying, you know.
I'm going to take a sip of iced tea and calm down. Let's see, I got one more quick email I'll close out with, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. This last email is from Nix. Nix says, "Hey, Stank Dog, I'm a regular listener of Ben Rev Radio, as well as some of the other shows you have on DDP Hack Radio. I'm working on getting my 2600 meeting out there, and was wondering if..." What the fuck was that? Holy cow, I think a cat hair just flew right in my mouth while I was talking. That's pretty crappy. See, this is the reality that you get on Binary Revolution Radio. This is not a studio. I don't stop the show because something flew into my mouth while I was talking. We keep right on going because that's how we roll on Binary Revolution Radio.
I just burned my finger with a cigarette. I'm in the same boat, man. I'm going to fight the pain.
Oh, man, this is... Gosh, this show is so fun sometimes. Where was I here before? A piece of hair flew in my mouth. I'm working on getting my 2600 meeting out there and was wondering if you could say something really small about it at the end of the show. It's for Wichita, Kansas. We meet at 7 p.m. at Riverside Park. Oh, maybe, you know what? That's like one of those coffee house play on words, isn't it? Riverside Park, 1144 North Biting, on the standard date, which is first Friday of the month. If you could do this, it would really help us get out there. Thanks very much, and I understand if you can. I promise I won't flame you. No, I'm not going to do it at the end of the show. Fuck you. I'll do it right now. And if you don't like it, too bad. No, joking aside, of course, I absolutely am glad to mention anybody wants to put meetings together of any kind. You know, that's one of the things about the show, and one of my philosophies in general, is that we as hackers... Traditionally, hackers are very solo creatures. They sit in front of their computer and they'll hack and they'll educate themselves and, you know, they might chat with people here and there. But I don't see why it is that only business people should be networking together and working together and sharing information. me, I wish the hacker community, and that's why we always use the term the hacker community, because we are a community. We should be working together and embracing each other and getting information out there. So absolutely anybody putting together a hacker meeting, you know, we're more than happy to help out. So where was this? Wichita, Kansas, first Friday of the month. Go check out their meeting. It's at, once again, it's Riverside Perk, 1144 North Biting, B-I-T-I-N-G. And if anybody wants me to mention their meeting, I'll be glad to. It's not a problem. Email me or whatever. Or if you want to start, you know, we recently announced that we have Binary Revolution meetings starting up. 2,600 meetings generally are in large cities. So there's people out there in small towns that are hackers, you know, that want to meet other people and work together on projects as well. So if you want to start a BinRev meeting, contact me as well, and we'll see if we can't hook you up.
Stank, I gotta say, you know, not only the show that you do, but the props that you give and the information and the show of solidarity and the community that you're building is really inspiring to me. And it's part of the reason that I really wanted to do this show and be a part of what you do, because I really gotta tell you, you know, I'm inspired by the letters that I'm hearing, and I'm really interested in this community that you're building and the solidarity that everyone has with one another through diversity, race, age, creed, class, sexuality. You know, I can really see that this is a community of people who are that have loyalty to each other and a morality, a building morality. You know, I just had to say that, man.
Yeah, some more than others, but yeah, generally speaking, hackers are surprisingly good people. We're not going to go into the whole rant about what the media makes us out to be and how we're out to, you know, pillage and rape and deflower your daughter and all that kind of good stuff. But you know, most of us are good people who just have a perverse curiosity for technology. That's pretty much it. So as long as we can share that with other people and work on projects, you know, that's the way to get things done. So let's wrap up the mailbag with that. And I sound like David Letterman now, wrapping up the mailbag. And let's move into some show and tell. And I only have a little quick thing to mention. And it's actually very interesting to me. I know probably listening this isn't exciting, but Dr. Zygmunt and I went out and stumbled across, purely by coincidence, an Enigma machine. And we've talked about the Enigma machine, especially the episodes with Ilanka, which is there was an old cryptography machine that they used back in the war to send secret messages. And we even had an email recently about how a lot of the messages were cracked because they left the Enigma machine keys on default, which is kind of funny. So we actually stumbled across one locally, believe it or not, at a local McDonald's. And the McDonald's down here, the trend has been that they're trying to make them themed McDonald's. There's like a rock and roll theme McDonald's. There's like a race car theme McDonald's. Well, this one is spy theme. It's got a bunch of old spy posters on the wall. It's got some cabinets and stuff with some memorabilia and things like that in there, like old tricks that they would use to hide messages. Like there's a pen that was hollow, and they put a microfilm inside of it, or a pencil. So only the person would know that it's in there to crack it open and pull it out. There was some guy's tooth. They had a hollow tooth that they stick in your mouth, and it's got a little thing hidden inside of it. So that when they check you,
man?
I hope it wasn't. Hope it wasn't a tooth of a customer, but
or like a one day exhibit.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is just the whole theme of the place, and like these are all legitimate things. They had some former FBI, CIA, KGB operatives donate a lot of this stuff to add to the theme. It's got cameras all over the place, like filming all the time. So like, and they have a bunch of monitors. You can look at pretty much any corner of the restaurant's covered with cameras. So it's kind of a neat theme. And one of the displays they have is the Enigma machine, and it does look pretty real. I think it is valid. So our next BinRev meeting, which will be in July, we're going to go check it out. I think we're going to do a little field trip like in the old days. So that's really about it for me. For you, I mean, obviously talk about anything that you've been working on or interested in lately, but I mean, one of the reasons we've had problems or have been having some timing issues getting time to record is because you've been at school. You've been dealing with some school stuff, which is over now, right?
Yeah, recently over. I had a real checkered life, man. I dropped out of high school, and I really felt that academia and the real world wasn't for me, and I wanted to be a hustler, and I was a street cat, and I did a lot of, malcontent type of things, and I finally realized that, you know, I should make a difference, and that I had a responsibility, and I should go to school. And so I took my GED, and I tested into, like, basic English, where I had to learn to write a paragraph. You know, and I was an adult sitting in a room with really younger kids, and worked my way through the GED, then went on to community college and fought through that and worked through the whole time, working with kids. I worked with child care. And after-school programs, started just doing, like, you know, aftercare for ages 5 to 10, and then it's moved on to, you know, quote, at-risk kids. I never liked that cliche, but that's right. How they're labeled. And, you know, after-school programs, 2 to 6, teaching basic reading skills and math skills. So I've been doing that for a long time, and I finally transferred to a four-year college and graduated with a BA, and I'm in the process. So I took my GREs in the process of getting my applications in for graduate school to get a PhD in philosophy or sociology and become a teacher, because I really feel that the future is going to be with the minds of the youth. It's really difficult to change older people's minds, and I see that the generation that's in place now has got a real particular way of thinking things. And I really feel that I can make a difference, Stank, at teaching and educating kids in school. So I've really spent, you know, probably 8 years on this journey of working two jobs sometimes and going to school and trying to bust this out, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure you will. I have no doubt that you will, just from what I know. I mean, I know you're a motivated person.
I
know you absolutely will. And you know, the thing is that I think there are a lot of, you know, one thing about hackers is, and I'll speak very generally, of course. There's always exceptions, and there's always people who disagree or whatever. But generally speaking, hackers are... I mean, I'm just going to say it. I mean, if it comes across as egotistical or whatever, generally hackers are smarter people. They're smarter than most of their peers. Maybe I'm an ass for saying that, but quite honestly, yeah, I honestly believe that. I think that, because I hear a lot of stories, and I guess this is getting kind of a very special episode of Ben Rev Radio. We need some sappy music in the background, but you know what? I've seen people in IRC talking about, you know, how bored they get in school. They're sitting in school, like, writing programs, because whatever's going on is boring them. You know, they're not learning. They're sitting in there going through the motions. They're not challenged. You know, they're not being taught things that they find useful or whatever. And on one hand, I don't want to say, yeah, ignore school and do what you want, but at the same time, if you're bored by it, I don't know. A lot of people think that the solution is to drop out and get their GED.
Right.
You know, some people even say they want to drop out early and get their GED in 10th or 11th grade so they can start college early. I really don't even think that's the way to go. I mean, college is definitely something that we frequently back up on the show, and I'm glad to hear that you also felt the same way, that you'll go through times in your life where sometimes by choice, sometimes not by choice, you'll have to change and alter your path in life. But you should always try to be on that path of enlightenment. As corny as that may sound, you should always be out there trying to better yourself and thereby bettering the world. You know, dropping out and leaving and running away thinking you can do everything better without this education, without going through these, is not exactly the way to go. I mean, you really do want to get your education. I mean, and I think it's a great... I'm really proud that you came out and just say that... You said, hey, I decided I need to go to college. I think it's going to be, I'll be able to have better effect on people.
Definitely.
And change by doing that. And that's a testament to, you know, having drive and ambition. And I hope that most hackers, you know, don't get so disenfranchised with education, maybe based on high school, bad high school experience or whatever, that they just give up and think that it's not necessary. Absolutely, college is necessary, and you will always get farther with an education of some kind than without.
Right, and I want to also mention that my brother, who had a child when he was really young, went to a professional school, a technical school, and learned computer science.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's excelled in his field, and he's a network administrator, and it's been a real coup for our family to have this, you know, economic money coming in and him to get this education. And I really agree with you, whether or not it's this academic dream of the PhD and the master's, or if it's as simple as a technical school, which, you know, it's about what you're going to glean from school, of course. So if you're going to go to a good technical school and you're going to glean a lot from their programs, then you can go on and do whatever you need to do. But, you know, definitely, you know, we have these sources of education and they need to be utilized.
Yeah. Yeah, and
community college is excellent for that, you know.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't afford a full college. I went to community college to start off with, made sure I got an associate's degree so that I, you know, if I wasn't able to afford to go the rest of the way, at least I had that to fall back on,
yeah.
You know. And then I took night classes and struggled taking – I could only afford one or two classes at a time. And I got was lucky for a while there where my mother worked at a place that would pay for her family to go to school. So I got a couple free classes that way. So that helped out a lot. And then, you know, it's like you do what you got to do. You know, I didn't.
We're going to need tools to fight the system, and we're going to need tools for revolution.
That, you know what? That's I can't put it any better than that. I really can't. I think that's a fantastic way to put it. And you know what? I have nothing but respect for anybody, whether they're in hacking, whether they're in music, whether they're in anything. Any human being that's out there working. I mean, there was a couple times, you know, I'd like, hey, you want? Can you record tonight? No, I'm working a 10-hour shift. You know, you're out there working. And going to school, getting that education, and making music, you know? So, yeah, that's I got nothing but respect for anybody in any situation like that, whether they're, you know, on the radio or not. So, anyway, let's get out of the sappy, corny side. And I've talked to your brother on the phone before, too. We worked out some of the technical aspects of the sites and stuff like that, so that all went fairly smoothly. I think we had one little typo problem.
He knows the family and everything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. all right, so let's see. You know what? I guess we'll kind of just transition into our main topic tonight, which is basically the music industry and what it means to, I'll say hackers, but let's just say people like us, people who do not have the connections to the inside music industry, either because we aren't in the social class to do so or have the connections, or just simply morally disagree with it and don't want to get involved with that. We just believe different. There's a different way.
You got it, man.
So, actually, you kind of just talked a little bit about your history, but how you say, you know, you want to go into teaching and educating children and changing things like that, but what about, how did you get into music? When did music come in? Which was first, music first, and then you went to the education, or...
Music first. I had a real musical father, and I grew up to mostly soul music. My father was, you know, a New Yorker from the East Coast, so I grew up to the Commodores and Kool and the Gang and reggae, Bob Marley. My father was an audiophile, and he'd buy records. He'd hear things on the radio and buy it. So I loved music, but I didn't have any dreams. Yeah, I played the clarinet when I was in sixth grade, Stank, but it didn't last. You know, the reeds, all that stuff was just too much for me.
Yeah.
So when, of course, rap music, hip hop, changed my world because, of course, it was lower class people utilizing the tools that they had, which weren't guitars and synthesizers and keyboards, which we didn't have access to any of this. The idea that you could actually sample music, take little bits of music and construct beats and not have to construct them from nothing. Or have to learn to read music and do all of these things that it took to, you know, the studio work. You know, music was so protected at that time. You had to be a professional. It was a closed industry. And rap music to me really signified, and later electronica, of course, which followed in the footsteps of hip-hop, in its completely digital form, music not having to be constructed, people making fantastic electronica that don't read music. And so I guess, you know, hearing hip-hop in the early 80s, late 70s really blew me away, and having this audiophile father who brought home Grandmaster Flash, you know, the message really was, I guess, the turning point for me to realize that there was a music source that you could talk, the words were a musical, and that the music wasn't too hard to find, and we could make it. This is something that we could construct in the ghetto, you know?
Right, and you know, the thing is, there is a bond. You know, with hackers, the mindset is exactly the same. We can't afford to buy the top-end machines all the time. We can't afford to buy the new Mac G5 super-thin 20-inch laptop, whatever. We got to make do with what we have.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned, and also just to clarify, you mentioned, you said, you know, from a lower class. Well, of course, you mean a social class, their, you know, financial class, and that's exactly the same thing. You know, hackers generally, either because the whole fuck the system thing alienates them and they don't go into corporate jobs, they don't go into money making or whatever, or simply the age. I mean, a lot of hackers, you know, become hackers or get into that mindset at an early age of 13, 14, 15, or even earlier sometimes, and don't have jobs and money. So, you know, the same thing kind of happens of doing what you've got to do for your livelihood and to advance yourself and further yourself. So there's definitely a bond there. So you said that happened before. So what, like, how'd you get started? I mean, what was the first track that you ever did, and how did you go about? I mean, I'm picturing here, are you like out on the street corner, you know, just freestyling lyrics and then go home and try to record them on an old-fashioned cassette recorder, or how did that go?
I started as a break dancer, and we'd have linoleum, and we'd go around with our linoleum, and we'd beatbox. We had like a whole little crew. We had the middle class white guy had the boombox, and then all of us were the diverse group, you know, who had all the talents. You know, one beatboxer, the other kind of one rapper. We had a break dancer. And then recording it came about, I guess, using answering machines, because at that point they were really accessible, you know, these little mini cassette tapes. And it was just basically a, you know, you're laughing, I know.
Seriously?
Seriously.
That's awesome.
The first recordings were on, literally on, like, the greetings machine. You know, we just do greetings, you know, 18 seconds of a track. You know,
that is so
just
awesome.
To practice it. Hear it back, you know, just the process of actually, like, hearing our own voices and getting used to, like, you know, rapping and the music and recording, you know.
Wow, I've never heard that story. I've never heard a story like that before. I had no idea. That is so funny.
And then a guy in the neighborhood got a four-track stank, which, analog, using a typical cassette. You could buy a special cassette, but you could also use a typical audio cassette. And it was just basically four-track, well, lots of knobs, pretty limited, and you still need to have a microphone and a beat. But that was a big jump in technology when the four-track came around, $250, $300, and that became accessible, you know.
Right. Right. So at this point in the game, did you envision or did you think that this was going to be, you know, you're going to be a millionaire? You're going to, you know, did you go looking for trying to get signed somewhere and stuff like that, or?
Great question. No, I didn't, Stank, because I understood and I saw that those wealthy friends that I had, you know, I grew up in the East Bay and I grew up in a hip hop society environment where Digital Underground and a lot of these Bay Area artists were my age growing up. And so I got to go see, like, Shock G Studio, and I had my wealthier friends, and I would see, like, they had $10,000 worth of samplers and MIDI machines, and I couldn't ever see myself being able to afford that. So I totally thought, you know, unless you're so talented you're like Tupac and you could go to people's studios and they'll pay for your studio time, you're never going to have a professional sound. You're just going to be mired in, like, you know, underground status and, like, a bad audio, you know, rapping in my bathroom, basically, to a four-track.
Right. And did you take those tapes and, like, try to bootleg, sell them out in the street, give them away to friends, or just...
No, I made mixtapes for people to listen to, and it was just purely for enjoyment. And, you know, drum roll, it wasn't until the computer came, and I finally started to realize that there was going to be a change where all of these external tools were going to be able to be synthesized by the computer, the samplers, the MIDIs, the voice changers, the recordings, and I started to sense that. I started to finally feel optimism that this could be something different for me. And, of course, the Internet, in its distribution value, the fact that I could expose my music to, you know, potentially millions, billions of people blew my wig out, man.
Right, yeah, and it's like... that's why, like, even I talked about earlier, we've got people from the UK, from England, from Portugal. I've got an email from just all these places that it just blows your mind, you know, at this global...
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean,
emails from South Africa. I got an email from a 56-year-old woman in South Africa, from Argentina, from Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm blown away, and each one that I get, Stank, it fills my heart with love, and I just feel that... I just thank the Internet again for this tool that I have to be able to reach somebody 1,000 miles away,
right,
and for them to hear me and be able to download my music for free, and it didn't cost them a thing, and then other people can find it, and it's there. And
right.
I just, man, I'm I love the scene. I love the Hackers and Crackers. I love the internet. This technology to me is our generation, and really, you know, going to change our lives continually forever.
Yeah, I've said on the show before too, and people kind of have a little jab at me about it for being kind of corny or whatever. But it really, exactly what you said, it really touches you when you realize that someone in these remote places is listening and enjoying something that you created. It's just a feeling that you can't even put into words or describe. You know, it really is. It's really a cool thing. So I feel you. If nobody else listening does, I feel exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
So then your interest in this preceded the interweb, the global interweb. So when the internet came around, of course, that changed a lot of things. When the internet became something that you realized, you know, had potential to it, even at this stage, where you still had no interest, like in going for a label, do you have an agent or anything like that?
No, I never did, and I was really fearful because being so close to hip hop, I was friends with a lot of these young guys that got swept up and eaten up, exploited, raped, and sent back packing. Mm. You know, a lot of these young guys were promised big deals. I actually knew some of these, you know, there was a huge explosion of East Bay hip-hop, you know, around the Too Short era. So there were a lot of young guys being signed kind of in this gangster rap theme, and they were just getting eaten up like it was Pac-Man. They would get signed, produce a couple tracks. They would keep them for as long as possible, as long as they generated money, and then cut them off as soon as possible. Never give them another deal. And so I watched that, and I watched people have to change their music and their creativity and the way that they said things just to get that one deal and then still get screwed over. And so I thought to myself, if there was a way that I could insulate myself from that, I think that I would be a better artist and be longer lasting, having to go through this process of protecting myself and not being economically exploited.
Right. Well, and you know what? It's you've jumped on where a lot of other musicians are coming on now. Again, it is important to note that your interest preceded the internet. You know, so you were already into this and learning a lot about the direction you wanted to take and deciding what it meant to you. And then the internet came as a new tool that you could take advantage of and use. A lot of people now are taking the internet for granted that it exists, and it's not really taking advantage of it in a negative way, but, you know, they have opportunities there that I think are very important to talk about. For example, you now, looking back now, what kind of options, like let's say somebody's listening right now, and you know there are definitely people listening right now that are interested in pursuing music, whether it be for financial gain or whatever. If they want to, that's fine. But what if somebody's listening who just wants to make music and share it with people? You know, how do they get started? I know we've had conversations in the past about MP3.com, and there's no point in rehashing those on the air now. But, like, how would a person who wants to get into making their own music and sharing it with as many as people, where do they start? I mean, how do you actually get started doing it? Even from a technical standpoint, like, not everybody has a studio in their house.
Okay, well, to begin with, thanks to the Hackers and Crackers, there's software in the right places if you need it for the purposes of recording. And software like Cakewalk and Sound Foundry and Cool Edit, which has been bought now by Adobe, it's now called Adobe Edition, are all simple to use and easy interfaces, and all, not the most complicated and powerful of programs, but are all easy to learn. And like I said, have an easy interface. And like I said, you can find them out there for a fraction of the cost if you know where to look.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, a sound card. Most computers, base computers like Dell and those, I'm not giving you the best sound card. So I started with an Echo Layla, which was a very pricey sound card. But at the time, we were really pushing the digital. I think it was 24-bit. And it was $700, and I had that for many, many years, and it gave me really good sound, and it finally blew out, and I had to go to the industry, and I was really surprised and happy to see that prices had fallen dramatically. And M Audio produces a slew of very cheap, inefficient, top-notch, powerful 24-bit sound cards that would work really efficiently, have ins and outs. I think they just a PCI slot, and they've got it's an out box, and they've got two ins, two outs, and that would work pretty good for microphone inputs and guitar inputs. And then it goes straight into Sound Foundry, Cakewalk, or Cool Edit / Adobe Audition, and it's digital right into your computer. And just going through the process of that and practicing it will really enlighten you to, you know, how things have changed with Final Edit Pro and the ability for videographers and video makers and documentarians to access this software is just great. And you know, now we're able to, like you said, in the comforts of our own homes, have the studios to make really top-notch, good quality sound for efficient prices. And also make video. I had to mention that because right along with audio technology is video technology.
Right. And something we believe is the next thing coming too with Hack TV, you know, that we're working on and pushing out there. It definitely is, it's getting to the point financially where you still have to drop a little coin. Let's be honest. It's not all free exactly. Like getting back, for example, to software, there are options out there. And I think anybody listening to this show, like I said, hackers will get it done.
Yeah,
they know what to do, where to look, what they've got to find, what they need to do. I mean, I'm, recording with Audacity, as I've mentioned on the show before, which is free software. It would never do for music, you know. I mean, I guess I could make it do. Like I said, you do what you have to. I could make it, some music with this, but it's not best suited for music. So there are other options. And yeah, a little bit of research, a little bit of looking around will provide that. Now, as far as the sound card, so software aside, hardware-wise, you mentioned the sound card. What is, like, say, the lowest price, the cheapest that somebody can get in right now? If they're listening to the show and they say, okay, all that's well and good, Zerl, but what do I buy? I mean, how much?
If you were really just trying to make something, and a lot of the music that I hear from people from other countries that's just really done a standard sound card that comes in your computer, they're much better than they used to be.
Right.
So most people have a good enough sound card to basically plug a mic directly in. And I think that, you know, the sound plug itself is a 3/4 and not a 1/2-inch cord. So you just plug your mic, actually, you get a smaller mic, which is, not a big one with a big cord, and plug it in, and I guess just having the proper software with the sound card that most people have with their comp would work fine.
Wow.
So just access to some of these programs that I mentioned. And like I said, finding them in a demonstration capacity is not a problem, and you can try them out.
Right.
And see which one you like the most. And, Stank, I like this question because you mentioned earlier about hacking and what you do every day. And I really like that you're determined and you like to tell your fan base and your listeners that you work every day. And something that I've tried to do with this technology and this information is I've turned so many young guys who wanted to have studios on to this software and how easy it is. And so a lot of young guys who wanted to be musicians in the 5 or 10 years I've been doing this have learned to use these programs and are excelling in them and are making wonderful music. So if anybody out there is interested in doing this, it's not hard to do, and it's something that's in your grasp. Like a lot of the nerdcore that I'm hearing these days,
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that it's in their grasp, because that's really what I want people to, when this show is over, I want people to believe that. I want them I honestly believe that is the case. You can sit down and realistically with hopefully a sound card in your computer. If not, you might go out and spend $50 on a sound card. What about the microphone? Are there different qualities from the microphone? And second to that, also hardware-wise, does the software replace the need for, like, mixers and sound boards, that kind of stuff? I mean, is it pretty much all software-based now? I mean,
it's all software-based, Hank. Isn't that amazing? You guys have done
awesome.
It for us, and you've given us the access to it. And it's all that's mixing, all the mixing down, all the special performance enhancers are all given in the program. And what you mentioned earlier, the microphone has always been our bane, especially me just being a hip-hop spoken word type. It's the voice that's so important. And so having the digitized process that the sound card gives you, especially if you're going to go buy one for $50 or $100. And like I don't mean to brand name, but I've had success with this M Audio. It worked really well, plug and play, had no issues with it, which I was happy for. And, it's really easy to do, and I like what you're saying, that people listening to this show should know that they can go in the next hour and figure this out, with the right programs and the hardware. This is easy.
Yeah, and they can do it. They can sit down with even if let's use lowest end scenario, cheap LabTech mic for $10, plastic, plug it into your sound card, record that direct digital in, and then start playing and manipulating it with the software, and you can generate something, and at least enough that you can listen to it and start playing with it and say, you know what? I don't like the sound of that. It's too tinny, or it's too, I need a better microphone, or I've got, you'll hear background noise, and you'll start to adjust and fix that and learn as you go along.
Exactly right, and I only support what you're saying is to give people the benefit and inspiration that this is not difficult, and if anything, if that's what's been stopping you, you know, I love that you're saying that. If what's been stopping you is access to technology, access to these programs, or the information on how to do it, it's really easy to do, as well as you should go into the search engines, because there's a lot of people who have made home studios, and they share their information, as we do, as us internet people do, and they show pictures of it, they show how they build it. They show you ins and outs, the way to hook it up. If you want to do something so specific, if you're a musician and you're into the guitar, you know, how to set your guitar up. I think this is really good information.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to jump ahead. I was going to talk about this later, but I'm going to jump ahead since you mentioned Nerdcore a second ago. What kind of music, not and if it's not Nerdcore, that's fine, but like, who are some of your favorite artists? What do you listen to? What CD do you listen to right now? Who are your favorites?
Think I'm really political, and although what I preach is definitely a little bit more collective, I listen to really radical hip-hop artists. So I'm listening to Immortal Technique, who's a Peruvian guy from New York, who's really incredible. The lyricist he's amazing. He did 3 years in prison. He came out as a battle rapper, and he's started to record music, and the guy's got a lot of energy, a lot of talent. Dead Prez is one of my favorite groups, although they're a black separatist group. I really appreciate their politics and their message. It's not necessarily meant for everyone, but I would definitely give it a listen. Their musical value, what they're saying, they're definitely on the right page. I like Talib and Mos Def, also my favorite artist.
Yeah, I like Mos Def a lot.
Yeah, so Sabak is a guy from Nonfiction, and he's come out with his own album, and I've been listening to Sabak. I like. I've always liked reggae, and I'm liking the Marley kids. Damian Marley is really talking about futuristic things, the youth, the internet education. So I like this kind of reggae where they're actually talking about. There's a certain type of reggae I'm not into where it's just kind of more of a. It has gangster similarities where they're just basically reality reggae, I'd call it. But I really have been liking some of the new dance hall that's out.
Well, what about, do you listen to non-hip-hop? Do you listen to rock? Do you listen to older, you know, classic rock? Do you like any of the new bands? Any, you know, anything outside of hip-hop?
I'm actually really not feeling music these days, and I like that you mentioned. I find, you know, my soul is in the old classic music, so I still listen to some classic rock and classic R&B, and those musicians, you know, what's the cliche that really felt it? But the modern scene to me seems to be muddled, and you know, you mentioned earlier about living in a corporate world. You know, living in a corporate America, that the music industry to me really reflects what you're saying. You're implying that it's a corporate music industry, and I'm bored by it. Even the underground, now there's this big argument between what really is underground. Is it somebody who's not making too much money, or somebody who's who's signed to a small company? You know, what really defines underground? To me, an underground artist is somebody who gives their music away for free. And KRS-One has a line that says, you're not underground unless you're free. So to me, that's the way I, you know, defined underground, is that you give your money for free, non-profit related, you know.
Right. So what do you think about some of the Nerdcore? Have you heard anything from MC Front a lot?
Yeah, I checked out MC Front a lot. I listened to a song about homosexuality because I'm in the Bay Area. I liked it. I went to his political songs, and so I really dug it. I'm going to go back and listen to his more fun songs. Checked out MC Chris also. I'm totally supportive of both of these groups that we mentioned and all of Nerdcore, most importantly because I saw that they gave their music down for free. It was all downloadable for free.
Right.
I like the websites. I like the way that they're promoting themselves and presenting themselves. I support every facet of hip-hop, although I myself represent a political clique, basically.
Right. Right,
but I really support Nerdcore. I like it. It's another. It's going to definitely add something to the pot something positive to the pot.
You certainly have that in common, that you believe in, you know, the distribution and things like that. So that's why I was curious how you've, you know, if you had any experience with it and what information. And have you ever, what about, have you ever heard of songfight.org? That's another popular site that at least I go to quite a bit. That's people that are, it's basically they give you a theme. They'll just make up random themes, and you have a week to put together a song around that, whatever that topic is. Weird, silly, bizarre names, and you write lyrics around it within a week, and you submit it, and basically the internet community listens and votes on who they like the best. And that's
where
MC Frontalot has been hugely successful in that going on there. But there's been a lot of people, and it's all free music, and it's what I like about it is that it's pure. It's the people doing music because they like doing music. You know, and because they want to share it and want it to be free. So, have you ever?
I haven't wanted to preach about this particular topic, but I think this is the point to say it. And you know, although I support Nerdcore and I support this concept of song fight, I really want to tell everybody that I myself feel that as a musician and a creator, that there is a responsibility to the world. And if the world was doing really good, I think it would be time to play. But I don't sense the world is good, and I don't see the world is doing good. I see death on my TV. I see oppression. I see a lot of sadness and pain and guilt and death and repression and exploitation and all these negative terms. And so I would really urge everyone, in addition to doing what you're doing, of course that what you're doing is fine, but I would really urge you in a sense of responsibility and as your comrade and friend, to do something good for the world, to put responsibility on your shoulders and make something that's of use to others and really is going to make this world a better place, because we're in some serious times now. And that's just my serious note. But I really like songfight.org, and it really is a wonderful way of showing people's creative abilities. But like I said, I'd like to see those topics have a stronger and more direct responsibility.
Well,
but that's just me, and that's my job. And if you want to hear all my preaching, go download the 5 albums I have at the site. You know.
Yeah, and you know, and that's. But the great thing is, I do agree with that in principle. That you know, put up or shut up. Do something. Do something to change the world. Do something to be productive. No matter which side of point of view you may stand on a particular topic. Go out and, like, on Songfight, just to use this as an example, not that I care or have any ties to this site or anything, but, you know, go out there and they may make up this whatever the topic is, but if you can turn it into something to educate people into your cause and your belief and your political views or whatever, if that's you taking advantage of that opportunity to change things and to address topics.
You're right,
so,
you're right.
You know, that's kind of, you know, we're very much support positivity, change by making positive contributions of some sort. Go out there and do something. You can talk all day long, but
you got it, man.
Do something. So
I really back that.
Yeah, and we've only got like a few minutes here, maybe 4 or 5 minutes. So I do want to talk about a couple, and we've touched on it a little bit, and that is just generally. Let's just call it free music, and you know, and your belief. What are your feelings as far as, like you said, you make all your stuff available for free download on the site. There's no place on there, you know, that charges for anything. It's all there, downloadable for free. Are you doing that because you want to spread the word out so that you can later on get signed by a label and make a big contract?
Absolutely not. I've always just done this for the people. It's a gift of mine. It's a gift of love. I toil really hard doing it, and I've lived in total poverty. You know, I've never made over $15,000 a year. I survive off student loans, and I've always just really felt that this was something that I was doing as a gift to everybody. And, you know, I don't think I ever want to be signed with a label. You know, I wish that I could receive a stipend, you know, just enough for so that I could survive. And that's what I envision about artists, is I wish that, you know, like you mentioned earlier about America falling apart and us losing the race of technology. And in each country, you know, the state has become so involved that we're losing our creative ability. So I'm worried about you know, how money influences creativity. So maybe if artists got a stipend, you know, all these artists have been millionaires now. So what makes them different than us? Because we're all creators. So maybe if we got a stipend just enough to survive, then we would be like everybody else. We wouldn't be superstars. And there'd be more creators and more people working harder. And a lot of people who toil as 9-to-5ers who want to be creative would have a chance because there'd be a stipend. You know, they did this in the 30s, Stank, with movies. They actually had, like, a fund where they would fund people to make movies, you know, a state fund, a government-funded program to make things better, to produce things that we enjoy, you know.
Right. Well,
it'll never happen.
Something we've said on the show all the time, too, is, you know, we always support free software, open source software, and stuff like that. But we also make it very clear when we say that there is nothing wrong with making money, with making a living. There is nothing wrong with earning money, especially if you're doing it with something you love. Now, you know, making millions upon millions, like, I don't know, let's go back to Destiny's Child you mentioned earlier. It comes to a point where it's like, you know what, I'm sick of seeing them on my television or on the radio, you know? So there's like a point of saturation. But as somebody who's putting out music honestly, absolutely free, not looking for anything to make big money, not looking for a contract, continue to put it out free, I don't see anything wrong with making money. What do you think about the I don't know how realistic, I would love a lot of hackers to support this concept, and a lot of music rights activist groups and stuff support this. What about, say, some sort of system, and this is all theoretical, and, you know, delivering it would be something different, but, like, iTunes is somewhat on the right track. We don't have time to go into too detail. But what about some sort of system that went straight from the fans straight to the artist? How would you feel if you had why don't you have a PayPal donate button on your site? Let somebody donate you 25 cents if they like a song they downloaded.
I know. You're right. And it would save me. It would totally save me. I'm in 100% agreement with this idea of money going directly to the artist. That's the whole problem that we've had this time.
Exactly.
I mean, get upset, Stank. This is where we go. We lose our wig. We don't want the money going to the corporations and the producers and the distributions and all the fat cats, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's the middlemen that are taking the money. The artists are doing the hard work. The fans are the ones that are willing to give up money for it, and then you've got these middlemen that start pumping things up and make you pay for studio time and advertising and lock you into these contracts, and then they take their cut, and what did they do to earn it? Not a damn thing! You know, they stand in the middle with their hands out, and that's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous notion, a ridiculous concept. I'm gonna put you on the spot here. How would you feel about, and again, the whole thing is, this is like an optional thing. People can still download it for free. You know, it's just if they wanted to help. I know for a fact I would. I would gladly pay. Would you be willing to maybe put together a CD that, like, people could buy for like $5 or something like that? Print out a nice color label, put a little sticker on it, greatest hits, Zerl's greatest hits or something like that, or best of, or I don't know, something.
I would, man, and I'm really hearing you, Stank. And I guess the only way that I'd allow myself to do this is I'd have to put a whole page saying, "Listen, your money will go to feeding the guy who struggled and toiled to do this." And if I could do that and just let everybody know that, you know, I would feel bad. Just me being this guy who said I would never do it for money, having the site. So if I could do it in a way where I could really say, look, this is all about donations and about you wanting to help me and less about me wanting something for this product.
Yeah, this
because
is my idea.
Because the product is for free. You know, this is my love for you, and you can take it for free. But if you love me back and your love is a dollar, then damn it, I'll take your love.
Right, yeah. This is my idea. I'm imposing this on you, not you. I mean, you put this out there all you want, but I will. Okay, we're hosting you now. I can gladly help set something like that up. You
I
know,
love it, Stan.
You have.
I
assume you have CD burners. You can burn a few CDs to people. I want the first one autographed.
Done.
I'm buying the first one, and I honestly put it on the site, and just because you know what, a lot of people, we have thousands of listeners that listen to your song opening the show every week. You know, and I know that they would gladly help out a little bit. People have offered to donate money to us, you know, and I feel awkward about it. You know, we put out a magazine for people, and we ask them, you buy the magazine for $5, and we'll use that to keep putting out the magazine and pay for our bandwidth bills and stuff like that. And it doesn't cover them. I still have to come out of pocket, but, you know, it helps. It helps eat into it, you know. And I absolutely would love to see the same thing with you if you put up a CD. Well, you know what? We'll talk about that off the air. We'll take that off the air. Because we are running low on time right now. We also, I want to talk about Creative Commons license and stuff too, but we might have to do that on another episode.
I've enjoyed this so much, thank
you. Yeah, oh man, this is a really fun show to do. Let's move into shouts. Actually, I'm going to put you on the spot one more time before we go out. When are we going to get a new custom DDP version, a BenRev version of Hackers and Crackers, part two?
In the process of being made, Hackers and Crackers 2.0 will only be released on your site, and your show, and you will have first shot at it, my friend.
Did you just give me the checks in the mail?
Yes.
Did you just give me the checks? No, okay. Let's move on to shouts. I'm going to hold you to that. We're going to debut it on the show.
We will, man.
And I can't wait to hear it. I can't wait. Shout-outs for this week. I've got a couple, and I'll stall for you to think if you want to shout-out anybody. My shout-outs go to the newest DDP member, Cypher X, who's already been helping out a lot, doing a lot of graphics for us, coming up with some cool ideas. So shouts to him. And to Dr. Zygmunt, again, who's been helping me tremendously with Hack TV. Huge strides on this finally, people. I swear, I've been making slow baby steps, but now we're making big, big steps, and I think you will be seeing this by DEF CON for sure. By DEF CON. So, shouts to Dr. Zygmunt for helping out with that, as well as a lot of other stuff he's been helping out on. He's been very, very productive and helping out with a lot of different things on my end. How about you? You got some shouts you want to give out?
Yeah, well, I want to first shout you out, and I want to thank you for, you know, your radio show and the collective community you've been building, and maybe you don't get shout out on your own show by your guest host, but, you know, I want to shout you out for supporting me and hosting the site and doing what you do, Stank, and I want to shout out all your listeners, and I want to shout out the people that have been inspiring me to do what I do, and I've been, and the only reason that I continue to rap and make spoken word and write these words on paper is because of you all. You all who have sent me letters, you all who have written me your words and your appreciation. And I want to, you know, BrokenFloppy.com is a guy who's always supported me. New Youth is a political site that supported me for 10 years. And some of these people I just want to thank. I wish I knew more, and I wish I could remember you all. But I love you all, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we definitely have, generally speaking, a very supportive community, and that's one of the things I'm really... really makes me proud of my fellow hackers. It really does. So I think it goes without saying, Dan, we're going to cheap out. Our site of the week is Zerl.com, Z-E-A-R-L-E. No big hacking, zero-day exploit, whatever today. Zerl.com. I want you to go hammer it. It's our bandwidth. I don't mind. I'm telling you, go hit this stuff up, download all this stuff. Zerl.com. If you have any feedback for us at all, email us radio@benrev.com. If you have any more questions, and I'll pass them on gladly to Zerl, and of course, you can contact Zerl through his website directly. And to close out tonight, we're going to do a track from Zerl called Confess, one that I have not used to close out before. I've used a few of your tracks, you know, and I don't think
you've
used
this
one. Yeah, I love you too, baby. And that's going to do it, and we'll tell everybody that we will see them next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Actually, you know what? I'm not going to let you get off that easy.
What, another? You're going to put me on the spot again?
I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm not going to use Confess to close this out. I lied. I'm going to make you prove it. And I don't want this checks in the mail crap. If you're working on a new Hackers and Crackers, I want you to drop me something. I want you to close out with something. I want some evidence.
I want you to freestyle
me something. And
all right, no beat, so it's going to be kind of a cappella then,
all right? All right, do it completely. I will shut up. The microphone is yours.
All right. You raised me on video games. You plan for my brain to be rot. I remember when football was just gray blinking dots. You tried to make it your money-making jalopy. They've slipped, can't you see? I've lived it all. The punch card, the floppy, the zip disc, the DVD. We were there on every occasion. We are the digital generation. The language of freedom, my mind is free on the net, the underground, the media, the gathering place, the trading place of things that you don't know about yet. You fucking government stooge, I'm in your base and I'm killing your dudes. Their copyright protection gives me an erection. As soon as they make it, we break it. Whack-ass activation, you just release a keygen, and we beat them at their own game. We got them shaking in their boots, you unimaginative fool, trying to hire us as your tool, spending untold sums to keep us on the run. Unstoppable, well, never done. Better off trying to block out the sun, because we do this for fun. Hackers and crackers, you know how I feel. Thank you for making my music real. Stank, my dog, for support, leading a binary revolution towards our collective freedom. If you think that Operation Fast Link, if it made us blink, we rise like phoenix from the ashes to the flame to live again. We will remember the work of Callisto, Deviance Class, Echelon, WLW, Fairlight, APC, and Razor 1911. We retire your names to Hacker Cracker Heaven. Yes, keep doing what you do. We need you. UFC, Vengeance, we see you. The word crack is frozen because they keep it real. Thank you, Stank. You're the man.
I think we're just going to close right out on that, man. Thanks for being on the show, and we'll definitely get you on as soon as we can in the future.
I appreciate it, brother.
All right, peace out.